Good evening and welcome to the Late Debate as Election 2020 gets into its stride. I'm Katie Hannan and joining us tonight we have Fine Gael TD for Louth and former Mayor of Drogheda, Fergus O'Dowd, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Mid West and spokesperson for the National Drugs Policy and Urban Affairs, John Kern, Labour Senator and election candidate for Dublin Bay North, Éan O'Riordan, Social Democrats Dublin City Councillor and election candidate for Dublin Central, Gary Gannon, Sheila Riley, Head of Digital at Iconic News, and columnist and broadcaster Lise Hand. Now, we want to hear from you, so do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. Now, if you've missed any of the election coverage today, you've come to the right place as our crack reporters are keeping a beady eye on every twist and turn of this campaign. Today was all about promises.
Promise you America. Workers will continue to see improvements in their take-home pay through wage decisions that we can influence and through changes in income tax bands.
When a person comes to the age of 65, they should have the right to their state pension.
In any decent society, it is not acceptable that a million people are languishing on a hospital waiting list. And in any decent society, it is absolutely not acceptable that over 10,000 people are homeless, including close to 4,000 children. I promise you a miracle. Belief
is a beauty thing. An awful lot of people feel that they're on a treadmill. They're living to work. One of our key priorities is to ensure that there are flexible work options for people so that they can strike a better work-life balance and they have time to look after the things that are important to them.
And that was, of course, all those issues that all the candidates and the party leaders were hoping we'd be talking about today. But of course, once again, events outside of politicians' control are dictating the election agenda. Fine Gael leader Leo Varadkar is diverting to Drogheda tomorrow after that gruesome murder of Keane Mulready Woods. And we will be returning to that later in the programme. But first, let's have a look at all those other stories today and all those other developments today. Lise Hand, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were on The Economy today.
Yes, that's right. In a way, I suppose there's a slight sort of phony war about this at the moment because neither party have published their manifestos with the massive detail. So it was very much broad brushstrokes. And there was quite a lot of sniping as well between them. You know, Fianna Fáil were making the point that, Fine Gael Fianna Fáil were sort of saying, oh, we held Fine Gael back from going completely mad and, during government-wide confidence and supply, from giving away tax and all. Look at the Fiscal Advisory Council, wrapped them on the knuckles and so on. And Fine Gael, of course, were out of the block saying, well, boom and bust cycle, that was all down to Fianna Fáil. Anytime they got the economy, they banjaxed it. There were some straws in the wind about what possibly might come, in terms of widening tax bans and increasing tax credits. Maybe Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil certainly indicated that they wanted to spend more on public services and so on. But, it was really sniping around the edges because they don't really have anything to get to grips with. But they were both setting out their stall going, we are the ones to actually mind the shop. We're
trust
the competent
us, trust
ones.
Trust us.
Trust us, trust us. Exactly, yes.
Okay. Sheila, Leo Varadkar was in Longford today, wasn't he?
He was indeed. He was in Edgestown visiting the digital hub out there, which is newly opened. And he was in Longford town. I was interested in the venue he chose. He went to Fabiani, one of the swankiest coffee shops in the town. I'm sure he felt right at home there. It wouldn't look out of place in Donnybrook or Castleknock.
What about the Longford Arms?
he didn't get to pop in there this week.
The Sock Dems had their campaign launched today, Gary.
We did, yeah. Very successful, actually. Went right into the heart of the North Inner City in the Buckingham Street beside the Home Monument there. We launched our campaign talking about bread and butter issues, basically lowering the cost of living for people by investing in services that people are talking about. And on the doors, and I'm sure I'm not the only one experiencing this, that's what people are talking about. They're talking about childcare, they're talking about family care, they're talking about how they can kind of alleviate the burdens. Where if we're talking about a good economy, what does that actually translate to for the average family in Dublin or throughout Ireland? And we're talking about investing in our public services. And it's like, it went really, really well.
Did it?
It did. I was delighted by it.
Imagine our surprise.
An extraordinary review from Gary Gannon of the Social Democrats. You, of course, had some very good news for yourself, for your own political campaign today with the announcement, not unexpected, I suppose, from Maureen O'Sullivan that she was stepping down.
No, and actually I probably should say Maureen stepping down. I think she's been in TD for 12 years and been an activist much longer than that, and she would be commended for the work she's done. She's been excellent in terms of
and all that. Is it the end of an era, or do you consider yourself part of that legacy of the Tony Gregory?
Well, my parents canvassed for Tony, and Tony actually wrote an application letter for me to the college, and somebody's my reference point for politics was always Tony.
How come you didn't stick with that team then?
I watched independence my whole life, and I could walk around the inner city as an independent telling people about what's wrong until I'm But actually, a radical
Tony Gregory got some very radical.
Yeah, but there's only ever going to be one Tony Gregory. We've always had good activists in the inner city. I want to be a great legislator. And I think that's the difference in terms of how I'm going to do my politics. I want to write budgets and allocate resources.
Okay. We'll be back to what everyone wants to do later in the programme. Sinn Féin, of course, launched their pension policy today, Elise, but one of their own councillors stole their thunder.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I'm sure the party are hopping over it because, you know, this was a really substantive thing talking about the pension, basically the pension gap. You know, they wanted to sort of put down a marker saying...
Which does look like having potential to be quite the election issue.
Absolutely, extremely problematic because, you know, at the moment as it stands, if you retire, you have 1 year that you're essentially on job seekers before you actually qualify for the state pension. This will actually go out to 2 years under, like, Fine Gael pledged to put it out to 2 years by in 5 years' time. So, you know, so this was actually something that could have actually grasped the attention. However, unfortunately for them, a Tala councillor, Paddy Holohan, decided to make an intervention which really wrestled the entire news cycle away from Sinn Féin's policy.
Yeah, we have a clip from that. This is Paddy Holohan's No Shame podcast.
He's so separated, not even from society now, but he's so separated from the history of this country. Leo Varadkar's blood obviously runs to India, you know, so his great-grandfather... Is not part of the history of this country, you know what I mean? Now, Leo obviously is, he's an Irish citizen, but his passion doesn't go back to the times when your passion goes back to...
Well, I mean, I think first we should say that Miriam, his mother, is from Dungarvan.
Yeah.
So let's actually just mother. Make that point.
I suppose we should also acknowledge that Paddy Holohan did put out a statement, a brief enough statement, saying that he apologised for any offence caused, but that he had been misinterpreted.
Well, yeah, it was your classic non-apology apology, really. Mm. I mean, it was apologising for if anybody took offence rather than for the offensive things he said. Now, it was one of those stories that moved very quickly. Sinn Féin came out and demanded he apologise and retract. This sort of apology arrived. Mary Lou MacDonald then said that she accepted the apology and let's move on. And Leo Varadkar was asked about it and he said he accepted the apology. But I am not necessarily sure that's the end of it. I think they would like to think it's the end of it, Sinn Féin, but I'm not sure it will because it does open questions. Okay. You know, it does open a whole load of issues and questions, and I'm not sure they can shut the door on it quite as quickly.
Well,
as
we don't have anyone
to.
From Sinn Féin here tonight to respond to that, but I'm sure, as you say, we will be coming back to it. Fianna Fáil was on the attack today, John, about insurance, and what they were saying was the government's weak response to this problem people are having to actually just get an underwriter to take them on.
Yeah, the whole issue around cost of living has been a huge, and one of the big elements on that is the insurance issue. And funnily enough, I referred back to notes when I was first elected to the Dáil in 2002, there was a challenger who ran on an insurance policy issue, the cost of insurance in our constituency. Mary Harney was there at the time, and he ran it. He got probably about 1,000 first preference votes. And the government that was formed immediately afterwards took the issue very seriously, and within a very short number of years had set up PIAB, and we saw immediately insurance premiums begin to reduce. We have been going around in circles year after year after year with rising insurance costs, and while the government will turn around and say, oh, they've levelled out and they're not increasing as quickly, the problem for most people is that they are currently unavailable in many categories, unaffordable for many people, and the reductions that people would have expected to see haven't come about.
Is this an attempt, though, to wrestle this insurance issue, which seems to be playing very well for Sinn Féin and Piers Doherty in particular, and to try and grab a slice of that pie?
No, that's not it at all. I think as public representatives, everybody at this table who's a public representative will have been contacted by groups, whether it's a creche, whether it's somebody hiring bouncing castles, who have been directly affected with insurance costs, either not able to get a quote for insurance at all, where a cover has been fully withdrawn, or that the quotes are prohibitively expensive. We're all well aware of it. It's a cost of living issue. It's affecting the livelihoods of many, many people.
What about this idea, this notion, which was floated by Fine Gael before this election was called, and Fianna Fáil supported the idea of it again today, that we could have a referendum to limit the cost of awards or the size of awards?
Well, I think anything that makes sense if it reduces costs. And the first point is that, for instance, in car insurance, it's quite clear that while actually claims are down in terms of through the courts, that the premiums go up. And I think the fact that the judicial system is now looking at this in terms of awards that they might make, and while they can be still challenged through the courts, if they set a maximum what a claim might give a person, that should reduce costs. I think the other point
is... Is this a big issue? Are you getting
it? Is, I am getting
it,
certainly.
And are people saying to you, why haven't you sorted this
out?
No,
what people are saying to me, how I think what John said, it's affecting my business, it's affecting my crash, it's affecting, you know, my car insurance policy. It is a huge issue and people
what
are being ripped off.
Are you going to take a political hit for that?
Well, no, I think the people will vote whatever way they vote. The debate is about what the government has done and what the government should be doing and what it will do in the future. And the point is...
Are people happy is what I'm asking you for. Are people happy with what the government has done? Well, because this issue did not jump up last week.
No, not at all. In fact, Michael Darcy has been dealing with this week after week after week. And in fact, he made comments in the press, which I think one Supreme Court judge made a comment on as a result of it. So I think Fine Gael have been very concerned about this. And Michael Darcy has been very active on it and has been pushing the agenda, and in terms of the businesses and the insurance companies and the rip-offs
they
have
been.
But the government have taken steps. The problem is they haven't reduced the premiums. The profits of the insurance companies have gone up. Despite the actions taken by government.
But the point is where the judges will now make a recommendation that the maximum for whatever the injury is will be X. Well, that will reduce the premium because by going to court...
There is no guarantee because the actions you've taken today have not... they have reduced costs, but not premiums.
But
profits
have
gone up.
This hasn't happened before.
But the actions
we're talking about the future, not the past.
But the way it's going at the moment...
putting yourself in front of the people on your record.
Of course, I have no issue with that.
You can't just say, let's forget about the past. This is back to the slogan, a future we can all look forward to.
Of course, and even in RTE as well.
Okay, we leave that one there because I want to run a clip of Leo Varadkar, because he was asked about, of course, the homelessness issue, which dominated the agenda yesterday. And he was asked about his responsibility or whether he felt shame in relation to this today.
You know, I've often said that I believe homelessness is a stain in our society. It's a reflection of one of the things that's going wrong in a country where most things are going right. We have 10,000 people in emergency accommodation at the moment. That's a staggering figure. It's totally unacceptable. It brings shame on us all, quite frankly. But we actually need to do something about it.
Eoin, it's all our fault. It brings shame on us all. This is a radical extension of collective cabinet responsibility.
I don't really want to start off a contribution about homelessness or housing with a political point scoring exercise. It was a better response than the one he did the previous day, which was to point a finger at the Fianna Fáil Lord Mayor and suggested that he should make a statement regarding what happened on the Grand Canal. I believe that the response to this crisis has to be state-led. Our understanding from the Labour Party is that we are frustrated at the insistence on allowing the private sector be the solution driver. So what has happened is that state looks to the private sector to deliver houses exclusively. Planning laws have been altered and changed so that a huge number of planning applications don't go to the local council anymore, they go to Emboir Pinola directly. Communities can only have a discussion about these developments if they have the wherewithal to go to the High Court. The solution is what I want to talk about. We have a vision for a 5-year programme for 80,000 homes, and these will be state homes and state lands. Now, Father Philip McVerry has said there's enough public land in Dublin to house 100,000 people. These the solutions that were there in the 40s, the 50s, the 30s, the solutions that got my family rehoused in that era are the same solutions that can happen now. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be a reluctance to have a balanced approach between what property developers will do and can do and should do, but they have a profit motive. The state does not have a profit motive. And I think we've absolutely fallen down on that. So I would hope new government would reassess what we're doing, how we're doing it and how we're driving it. And
Fergus, is there going to be a new plan? Are we going to come back with the, it's working, just stick with us, the rebuilding Ireland is, we're getting there now?
Well, what you can't ignore is the fact that the number of houses this year...
No, I'm not. That's not the question I asked you, to be fair.
Well, that's the
answer.
Is
there going to be a new plan? Or are we? Are you fighting this election on stick with rebuilding Ireland? This is our plan.
Oh, well, I think part of the plan is that houses are being constructed more than ever before.
So there isn't going to be a new
plan?
No,
I want to answer your question fairly. And that is the first fact. The second fact is that the plan is to increase those number of houses. And the Taoiseach has said that the target for Fine Gael will be 40,000 per annum, which is higher than it was previously. And the need for housing
Has rebuilding Ireland been changed to reflect
the targets? No, he's talking about accelerating the process. He's talking about the Land Development Agency, which is the body which has been established to aggregate all the state land to make sure that it is built on. And it's also to ensure, obviously, that social housing needs are met.
Okay. And we had a long discussion, obviously, with Damien English on
this. Well, I wasn't listening to that, but I'm just answering your questions here tonight.
We're still not clear on whether we're actually sticking with exactly the same plan with no new...
Well, clearly there's a new target. The Taoiseach has set the target at 40,000.
I heard the Taoiseach mention that figure for the first time in his interview on This Week last...
That's right,
Was that it? That was the great unveiling of the new target, was it?
That is the Taoiseach speaking to RT on the Sunday of the election. So that's what he said.
Okay, I want to move on now because, as I say, we will get to that discussion on crime and what's happening in your town, Fergus,
sure, of course,
in a short while. But we want to continue now with our whistle stop tour of some of the big battlegrounds around the country. Sheila, you're a former editor of the Longford mm-hmm. Leader, living in Cavan now.
Yes.
So we're expecting some top grade intel for these two intriguing constituencies, I think people will agree. Let's start with Cavan Monaghan. There is an extra seat up for grabs there.
Yeah, and that's what makes it a very interesting constituency this time around. Obviously, the sitting TDs are Heather Humphreys, Caoimhín O'Quailean, Brendan Smith and Niamh Smith. It's, as you say, going to a 5-seater now. Caoimhín is stepping down, as we know, so... That opens up that seat there, and then there's going to be an additional seat. It's certainly going to be a battle royale. There's no doubt about it. Fine Gael would see that they should have a great opportunity to take one, and maybe the last time it was a 5-seater, they actually had 3 seats in Cavan Monaghan, but I would say that would be the best day of any week that would ever happen. Fianna Fáil, they have 2 sitting TDs, Brendan Smith, former minister. He had a pretty disastrous outing in the Europeans last year, but him and Niamh Smith are there in the running for that. And then Matt Carthy has come back.
After that disastrous outing, is he considered safe? Because he would always have been considered.
He's considered pretty safe, yeah. They also have another very good candidate on the ticket there as well, Senator Robbie Gallagher from Monaghan. He would have a fairly high enough profile there too. But the arrival, as widely anticipated, of Matt Carthy back there, you know, I mean, Sinn Féin are definitely going to keep that seat, and they would be hoping that they would be the ones that will capitalise and gain a second seat there, that they get Pauline Tully in. She's running a cabin for the party.
Who is, of course, people will know as the ex-wife of Piers McCauley. So, if you were to call it...
Yeah, you get lynched.
You do have to go home afterwards. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, I'd say, to be honest, I don't know what's going to happen with that last seat. To be fair, I think definitely 2 Fianna Fáil. Fine Gael have kind of... you know, Heather Humphreys is going to top that poll. But Fine Gael have weak candidates behind her, like in that they wouldn't be have a huge profile. T.P. O'Reilly is a member of a well-known business family in the Virginia area, but he just wouldn't have the name recognition yet, and neither does Sandra McIntyre. So they've a bit of a battle there. They left it too late to bring somebody in there. They had Joe Riley on the ticket, and then he and then changed out, and they left it too late. They only did that recently enough. So
is it between
Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, and potentially Robbie Gallagher from Fianna Fáil could sneak in there. You never just know, you know, with Monaghan.
That would be a big win.
Massive win.
Okay, Longford Westmeath. Oh, sorry, is there other candidates there that we should mention?
Yes, there are indeed.
Liam van der Spek.
Liam van der Spek, he's next on my list. Liam van der Spek from the Labour Party. He ran in the County Council elections last year. Tate Donnelly in the Green Party. He's a Trinity student, he just declared this week. Another really interesting one in this constituency is Sarah O'Reilly, who's running for Aintu. And she actually got a massive vote in the local elections last time around. She's ex-Fianna Fáil, Jean Poole, but she got 1,700 votes, first preferences. And she comes from Niamh Smith's area, and she could potentially be a real fly in the ointment candidate there. You never know what kind of trouble she could cause, and God, on a good day, could sneak in there too, to be honest. Jonathan Rainey is an independent who's declared this week. He's a former Fine Gael county councillor from Dublin as well, so...
Okay, and we mentioned Emmett Smith from People for Profit.
I don't know if he has 100% declared yet.
Okay. Okay, Longford Westmeath then. And of course, Longford famously is it the only county in the whole country that doesn't have
it
a TD?
Much to the consternation of Longford people, as you can imagine. We currently have in the constituency Robert Choi, Fianna Fáil, Kevin Boxer-Moran, Peter Burke, Fine Gael, and Willie Penrose for Labour. And Willie is standing down this time around. When it was Longford Roscommon, people used to say votes don't swim over the Shannon, you know, and that used to be the case when it was Longford Westmeath as well. They stuck very much to the county. Last time around, we saw a third of the votes from Longford going up the N4, if you like, and that elected those four Westmeath candidates. So now, this is why this time around there's a real determination in Longford, and certainly you can imagine that's what the Longford candidates are pushing hard for, is for a Longford win there, a Longford seat, if you like. And you've got two real kind of heavy hitters there up against each other. You have Micheál Carrigy from Fine Gael. He's a councillor with over 10 years' experience. Needless to say, he was front and centre today when the Taoiseach was round town. And you also have Joe Flaherty for Fianna Fáil. He's a county councillor there. And he's also a colleague of mine in Iconic News. He's a regional director in the group and a former editor of the Longford Leader.
Oh, but are we saying... obviously, the sitting.
I would say you'd have. Oh yeah, Kevin Boxer-Moran, freshly decoupled from the Independent Alliance.
Well, momentarily decoupled.
the alliance abandoned.
okay, so yeah, so Boxer-Moran is there. Yeah, Robert Troy,
Peter Burke. Yeah,
And then it's Willie Penrose's seat.
Willie Penrose's seat for definite. And you'd have the two Longford candidates, or the Longford candidates battling that out there. And I'm sure Gabrielle McFadden would not want to be left out of there, you know. Like, she's a former TD, she got Nicky McFadden, her late sister's seat there, you know, and she lost it last time around, so she certainly would be in the running tour.
Okay, who else do we need to mention?
GAA legend Alan Mangan.
Yes. Next on my list. Former Westmeath GAA star. He won a Leinster Championship with them in 2004. He works in community and alcohol and drug service, so he's a fairly high profile there. Yeah, he's running for the Labour Party. You have Saoirse Clark for Sinn Féin, Louise Heaven for the Green Party, James Reynolds for the National Party, Anna Kavanagh is running as an independent, Tony Riley is an independent, Donald Jackson an independent, Don Parker, Solidarity, People Before Profit, and there's rumours locally that Frank Kilbride, a former Fine Gael councillor, is going to throw his hat in the ring as an independent.
Will that put a bit of a fly in the ointment for anyone?
Potentially it could sting Micheál Carrigy a little bit, but I don't really think so.
Okay.
It's very interesting, I think, with Maureen O'Sullivan. I could be corrected here, but I think there's maybe 15 now retirements or whatever. So, I mean, it really shows it's going to be a very open field. I mean, there's going to be, no matter what happens, whatever the permutations are, there's going to be a lot of fresh faces in the next all.
There is. I think 18 was the figure I saw.
18.
That there was
18. I knew I was open to correction.
Now,
yeah,
yeah,
terrible
have now
numbers.
Stepped
so,
down.
Yeah. So it should be, you know, it'll be very interesting. There'll be just, you know, it'll be a completely different look on the next all, no matter, you know, what the permutations are.
Absolutely. Now, let's turn to the story that dominated the second day of this campaign, that truly shocking murder of 17-year-old Keane Mulready Woods. Leo Varadkar was asked about this today.
I think the whole country is really shocked by this. It's probably the most gruesome, grotesque murder that I can think of. And to have it perpetrated against a 17-year-old is just particularly beastly. And I just want people to know that the Minister of Justice is very engaged on this, has been in touch with the Gardaí Commissioner. I've been speaking to the Minister for Justice, and we're going to make sure that the Gardaí have the resources they need, both in Coolock and Drogheda, to find out who did this and bring them to justice and end this cycle of violence.
Leo Varadkar there, I think, saying what a lot of us were thinking in response to that horrifically savage murder. Fergus O'Dowd, you've come from canvassing in Drogheda. What are people saying?
What people are saying, just exactly what everybody thinks, is that's an appalling, barbaric, evil act. People are absolutely shocked to the core. They are very fearful. They're very worried. They really want these people to be put behind bars as soon as possible. And I think the due process is what has to do that. So what can we do to assist the Gardaí? How can you make sure that any information you might see, you might hear, you might think about, the guards need the evidence. And the number of Gardaí obviously has increased significantly in the last number of years. There's 25 new Gardaí in Drogheda this year already.
Has that made an actual impact?
It makes a huge impact because you have the armed response unit, you have the Gardaí, they set up themselves hundreds of roadblocks, armed police, unarmed police. They do house searches. Raided homes, have seized cars, have seized cash. If you look at what happened in Dunlear just out the road last week, there was a raid at 4:30 a.m. on an ATM. The armed response unit were actually in the village at that time, and they chased them as it happened across the border. The guards are very active. They have the support of all the people.
We all have a sense of why this murder was done and the way it was done.
Appalling,
and you saw this evening, it was really striking that there was vox pops done on the TV news and people were afraid to show their faces.
Mm. Of course, yes. Yeah.
And if they're afraid to show their faces to give a mild comment on the news, are they really going to turn around and put themselves in the position of, you know, being seen as
the Chief Superintendent, Christy Mangan, has addressed this issue in a meeting in Dunlear some time ago where there were other issues, including drug issues. And what he wants people is for them to tell the Gardaí what they know and then they will deal with it. In other words, he will use whatever the evidence he is given in the appropriate professional way to bring the people to court. The question is, and it's a question in many people's minds in Drogheda, is the question of should these people brought before the Special Criminal Court? Should they use the legislation in relation to being a member of a gang? We used it against the IRA in the 70s and the 80s, and that the word of a Garda Chief Superintendent in a court is... I just want to finish this point it's terribly important. The people of Drogheda want due process, the most effective, efficient way that can be done within the law to make sure that these people are put behind bars as soon as is possible. And that is what everybody wants, and that is our job. On that point, I think, we want to see in Drogheda, a commission that will look at the areas where there is deprivation, where there are estates which are run down, which need more leadership, which needs more child resources, child support resources, more family resources. I just want to make this point. I've worked in this town all my life. I know Rathmullen Estate. I worked with every family in there. I taught most of the children over the years, and I know these people so well, and they're the finest people in this country, and that a small number of people are given a time. The Gardaí actually say that there are about 40 people involved. Now the problem is that if I have a drug debt and I owe it to you, you sometimes can say to me, well, look, if you carry out this act and throw this petrol bomb,
They get sucked in to pay their debts.
And the fact is that we need a lot more community resources. Yesterday I had a meeting in the Dáil with all of the groups in the whole region, that's Loudmead, Cavan, Monaghan, and the community voluntary drug group who provide drug services, community services, with the minister to have joined up thinking, because the national drug strategy is not working. The communities are not being supported as they ought to have been. And that was a point we've made repeatedly in the Dáil with Minister Catherine Byrne.
So and, you're saying and your minister is not listening to you?
No, the minister agrees.
The,
no,
the
minister
TD
actually.
From the area.
No.
You just said you repeatedly made that point.
I've made it on the record in the Dáil, and I make it here tonight, and I make it everywhere I go. And I've made it at party meetings repeatedly. And I'm very much concerned and have been that people in our country who suffer, who come from areas of deprivation, are not getting the support from society that they need.
Isn't that a disgraceful indictment of
the
government
that was led by the party that you're a member of? That's one way of looking at it. The point is my job...
Tell me another way to look at it.
Well, the way is to listen to what I'm saying, and this is the truth. The truth is that we need to do an awful lot more for those communities. Minister Catherine Byrne agrees with that analysis. The voluntary people in my town agree with it too.
Okay, Fergus, you got a good run there. Aon, you're shaking your head.
Okay, look, there's a huge amount of good that happens in the area that I represent in Dublin 17, in Drogheda as well, okay? And Jed Nash has spoken about the Special Criminal Court as well as a mechanism that's needed at this place and time. What frustrates me, and this happened a number of years ago at the start of the 2016 general election when there was a shooting in the Regency Hotel, and Gary will remember it.
So can I just because we got a tweet in, and I'll let you respond to that then. 4 years ago during general election 2016, we had the killing in the Regency Hotel. Isn't it the case that new politics solved nothing for ordinary people living in disadvantaged areas ravaged by crime?
The point is, it's a general election now, so there's a lot of political talk, and so everybody is talking about this incident. But we've been talking about this for a year. Myself and Jed and Deshanna have been out talking about a commission, which you agree with, Ferguson, and I'm delighted.
I've written to him about it on more than one occasion about this issue.
Right.
I live in this town and it's my town.
I appreciate that.
And I want to make sure it's looked after.
So I've been, because what happened in North Inner City after the Regency killing and a number of other killings because of a local feud was that the Taoiseach did the right thing. Andy Kane did the right thing. The Fine Gael government did the right thing. They came. They said, I know it's imperfect, Gary, but I'll just speak to you for a second. Is that politics was taken out of it. Stakeholders were brought into a process. You're listening to youth workers, listening to teachers, listening to principals, all the rest, listening to community sector. The community actually understands the dynamics in an area better than anybody else, and they can speak to the issues at hand. I was calling for that in the Dublin 17, Dublin 13, Dublin 5 area, where we've had 6 murders in 7 months. Now in the middle of a general election, and all of a sudden it's the best idea that anybody ever had. Now on the national drug strategy, on the national drug strategy.
You are, of course, a former
as
Minister
is John,
of State.
And myself and John Curran both signed as former drugs ministers. 2 of 9 former drug ministers said a number of months ago that the community sector was being frozen out of decision making in the national drug strategy. Okay, and we made that call.
Ferguson O'Dowd is nodding his head in agreement.
I agree, and I called a meeting with the minister and all of the people in the region.
The
community groups on this very issue.
I swear to God. Look, I just finish my sentence.
You mightn't like it, but
okay, let me just finish my point for a second.
Of course.
So we made that point, and it was a very solemn thing for 9 ex-ministers to do. To criticise the current, because the community sector felt completely isolated from the national drug strategies, from local.
When did that happen? Like, when did that?
Well, look, I don't want to make a political point about it. They said in recent times, all right, and it's become very centralised, so the community voice is being lost, all right? Now, there was no response. Yeah. Hold on. I have to make this point, Katie.
Okay.
There was no response from government to that statement at that time. No response. And now we have the 6th murder in 7 months. And it's an election cycle that everybody cares deeply about it. There are so many things that people want to say about disadvantage, about youth empowerment, about all the issues that we talk about all day long, every day that we raise, all year long. Yep. And now we're in an election cycle. And it's disappointing to me that what we've been saying is only being responded to now when we've been saying it for months.
Okay, you had a good one. I want to dispute.
I have saying... Exactly the same thing for months.
But that's not.
In
but,
the
but,
Dáil,
but with respect,
my party
Ferguson,
meetings,
if,
in my
if,
town,
if your minister and your Taoiseach isn't listening to you, what? That's
but
not.
The, but
that's,
the, well, I mean, I'm, I have to do my job.
What good is that
TD.
To the people in your town?
No, but what I'm saying is, I am speaking what they are saying, and I've worked.
And
with
nobody's
the
listening to you.
Okay. No. The minister yesterday agreed with what the group were saying, and exactly what you're saying. We've been working it for months.
Yesterday.
Yeah, no. This has been going on for months.
But Charlie Fowling has refused
the meetings have gone on for months.
Commission situation on the north.
Okay, look, I need to get more people. I do think it's really important
to say during the period when the violence was taking place in the north inner city, we had this Mulvey report. One of the things that I was saying consistently was that we can stop this particular feud that was happening in the north inner city, but we can't stop the next one or the one after that. And the violence is only going to become more depraved. What happened in terms of the Mulvey report is, and I would consider a mistake that we shouldn't repeat. We cannot make a surgical incision into a small little area that's deprived and say we're going to change that and think that we can solve the problem, because all you're going to do is send it into the next community and the next community, the one after that. If ministers are accepting that there is a symmetry between poverty and crime, well then surely we need to accept that this is a national problem, that we need to confront on a national basis. And if we keep repeating this kind of, it's just my area or it's just that area, can we have a small commission, we're going to keep having these same problems in every town, city and village in Ireland.
Can I chat?
This particular murder was absolutely barbaric, and it has not alone dealt a blow to people who were in that community, but right across the country. And people are afraid and they're intimidated. And, you know, I don't know how willing people will be to present to Gardaí and so forth. But I would say this. And I think this will be a defining moment, this particular murder. It has been a wake-up call. Such has been the savagery around it. It has been unreal. But
this is not a wake-up call. We've had...
Let me finish the point.
Sure.
We've had issues before. We've had gangland crime. And when the Gardaí have been resourced, both in terms of equipment and in terms of manpower and overtime and so forth, they have been successful time and time again in this country, whether it was with the aid of the Criminal Assets Bureau and so forth. I have no doubt that this particular issue will be dealt with.
But I want to finish.
Okay. Yeah. But if we leave it at that, it will recur.
Okay.
This has been coming around for quite a while. If we look at all the figures in terms of the crime statistics around drugs, if we look at the number of people in addiction, the number of people in terms of treatment services, if we look at the seizures by Gardaí, across every matrix, every figure you look at is on the up. We have been well aware that this has been an increasing problem over recent years.
But how endemic? I just want to play a clip, because we had Sarah Keller in the studio a few months ago. You'd know Sarah from the North Inner City. She has been working in that community for a couple of decades now, I think. And she really, I think, captured the endemic nature of what you're dealing with and how it's almost impossible to turn it around because of what has been allowed to develop and how it's been allowed to seep into every, you know, crack of that area.
If you lived in a town in rural Ireland and you had a big factory in your town, you'd be delighted, because that big factory would employ a lot of people and there would be a runoff in terms of the local shops and hotels, whatever, that would make money out of the factory. We have a factory in the north inner city, a multinational factory, because the owners of it live somewhere else, probably Dubai or somewhere like that. And then we have the suppliers and they have no end of supply. And you've got the workers on the ground. And then, unfortunately, you've got the cheapest labourers on the ground. And some of those are children.
And Katie, can I just capturing.
Yeah, I sat in the studio when Sarah made that point. I think, look, I agree with what many people here have been saying, but we can't police ourselves out of this. If we think the policing is...
Well, that's clearly what Sarah was...
So we have to ask ourselves very deep, profound questions as a society. What is it that is so attractive for a 16-year-old who knows that lots of people end up dead or in prison as a result of this industry? Why is it so alluring? Why is it so attractive? Why is it so lucrative? And if mainstream society or mainstream economy is isolating you or makes you feel disconnected or disempowered, why is it so empowering to get involved in this area? Now, we can't police that out of somebody's mind. We have to create a society where young people feel totally connected, totally empowered and totally respected. And we haven't achieved that. So I'll give you one statistic. A three-year-old from a disadvantaged area, a three-year-old from an advantaged area. This three-year-old has 400 words in their vocabulary. This three-year-old has 1,200 words in their vocabulary. Don't be surprised 15 years later what the three-year-old from the disadvantaged background with the reduced vocabulary and the parents who are struggling may have a choice to make in terms of their lives. Now, if this is reduced just to Garda numbers... And I'm all about Garda numbers and the new Garda station, Dublin 17, which I've been campaigning for, and I'm very happy about that. But if we reduce it just to Garda numbers, we're missing the point.
I want to bring Sheila into this, because I think people might give themselves comfort, and wrongly comfort, from the idea that this is some inner city Dublin problem or inner city Limerick problem or that has somehow seeped up to Drogheda, so now people are getting more upset. But Sheila, this is a massive problem for every village and town in the country now.
Without a doubt, and particularly the Midlands, like some areas, just it's a really, really serious problem throughout. And as you say, in every parish, in every village, literally, it's unbelievable kind of the way it has permeated, particularly in the last 5 years, I think. And you'd see that even if you look at kind of the pages in the local papers, you know, the court reports and that what's coming through. Just the level of it is absolutely shocking, you know. And there's a real kind of concern out there, isn't it? How do you tackle it? Like, it's like a lot, you know, the dogs in the street seem to know who's involved and where, you know, where people are getting access to drugs around the town. And yet nothing's, and the people feel that nothing has been done about it. Like in Longford, you know, we got 5 extra guards there recently enough. And one of the things the superintendent stressed at the time was about visibility, you know, that there would be increased visibility. And that's a major issue. People feel they're just not seeing guards, you know. And I know it's kind of a cliche, you think, you know, rural Ireland, they're not everywhere. But it's that sense has kind of instilled a lot of fear and a lot of despair kind of around this issue that it just simply can't be tackled, which isn't true, you know, but that's what people feel.
Okay, I just want to give, because we're getting a lot of reaction in on this. We have the notion that the state can win the battle on crime, in inverted commas, or the war on drugs, is a myth. Drugs need to be decriminalised and addiction treatment given for far greater resources. That's from Kieran in Tralee. 25 rookies and more waffled by a failed government flailing around trying to explain yet another failure by their style above substance policies. Disastrous, is another texter. The very first thing that got the chop in 2008 was the Combat Poverty Agency. What followed was community supports and community drugs task forces, and their budgets were slashed. We have reaped what they sowed, not just an economy. We must be a society too.
Well, first of all, I want to that last comment. I agree that during the recession, the funding to drugs task forces were cut, as they were right across to a whole range of other services. The real problem has been that since the recovery has begun, and since the parent department, the Department of Health and the HSE, who fund drug task forces, their funding has gone up 30 or 40% since the recession. But the funding to drug task forces has not gone up, despite the increase in the scale of problem. And to compound the problem, the disadvantaged communities that Aon referred to, and he's right, and the opportunities where there were programmes such as RAPID, they've all been withdrawn. So we're the policies that have been implemented in recent years has been exactly the opposite to what should have been done. The task forces should be re-energized with increased funding, and I'm like, they've been static. It's unbelievable.
But is there a policy? And this is something that Sarah again mentioned that night, that there is a sense that there is, particularly if you're living in the kind of community that you're going to be representing, Gary, if you get your seat. That there's a policy of containment, that if we can keep it just within
absolutely these. And you can see that when we had Operation, the guards give them fancy names, I think it was Operation Sledgehammer, which essentially just pushed drug sellers out of O'Connell Street and into the communities down by Ballybock and Liberty House there. But one of my big frustrations about this, and I've been looking at it for, I'm 32 now, I've been looking at it my whole life actually, before some seeing Aylan was at a shooting down on Clonlough Avenue about 20 years ago when he was a councillor. This is a problem that is embedded into this, but it's not one without solutions. We can't just accept that this is something that's going to be reality forever. I do think there is an immediate police solution to give people comfort of mind in Drogheda or else, but then it's actually gone. And if one thing New Labour did get right, it was tough on the causes of crime. That's entrenched. It's not just about going after drugs task forces, it's about going after the schools.
But there is, can I just make the point here? I think, if I may, that the person with the most experience is Chief Superintendent Christy Mangan in our division. And what he said was that we will lose a whole generation of young people to drugs if we don't have the actions that we're talking about here. And I just want to make this point, that it's community action and it's community support.
Massive investment. It seems to me it has to be investment along the lines of what was pumped into Limerick at
absolutely.
The time.
Absolutely. Well, that's what we're talking about for Drogheda. That's what we want.
But and are we just talking about that level of it? Because I haven't heard anyone talking about that.
Well, I have been talking about it. I mean, I'm not here to... to justify what I've done, but I've raised it in the Dáil. You can check the records with Catherine Byrne, with the Minister of Justice repeatedly. And I've written to the Taoiseach about this.
But what I'm trying to say is my job as a TD is to articulate what I believe should happen. I just want to make this point, John. The reality, Fergus,
is for the last 4 years in particular, when the economy was growing, there was no growth in funding to these disadvantaged at a time when opportunity existed.
Fine, fair point. I'm going to have to take a break, but we'll continue the discussion
after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Again, I just want to get to these because we did ask people to give us their views on this. Katie, one of the ways to support young people in our communities is to properly fund youth workers in our urban and rural areas across Ireland. Funding for youth work is still 30% less than it was in 2007, and the youth population in Ireland is the fastest growing in the EU. Katie, the no one is talking about the well-off recreational users. You just brought that up in the break there, Fergus O'Dowd, who are working and earning good money that are buying drugs. That's prohibition doesn't work. They don't care where their money goes. And one more, the number one issue for me is the drugs crisis in a day that part of a young man's butchered remains were dumped in a public space. It's only getting worse. No mention from any politician who have obviously given up the fight against drugs and criminal gangs. Shame on the Minister for Justice, says Ed in Dublin. I just want to put this to you, Lise, because this is something that came to me when the story broke. And
what else are you going to say?
I thought of you right away because it was the day we learned of your friend Veronica Guerin's murder.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an echo of it in terms of when Veronica was murdered, and on a busy road in the middle of the day. It was an act of absolute arrogance and criminals and drug lords who genuinely felt that they were absolutely able, with complete impunity, to assassinate a citizen on a busy road. And, you know, as a result of that, of course, that led straight to the Dáil was recalled from its recess, and legislation was passed to enable the setting of a cab.
There was a sense of national emergency at that moment.
There was a sense of absolute outrage. I mean, I remember walking up to Leinster House the following, maybe the same day or the following, maybe it was the following day or a couple of days later. And it was just the whole railings outside Leinster House along Kildare Street was just a wall of flowers, you know, which was extraordinary. And, you know, every now and then I think something happens that is a turning point. And here you have, again, something. This murder was shocking on so many levels, but I think one of the most shocking things about it is the fact that it was done as a, almost as a display of their absolute and utter, you know, power. And I think that's what's shocking. And it just goes to show how out of control the situation is. You know, back in, you know, when Veronica was assassinated, we had drug lords, you know, wandering around town with ostentatious displays of wealth. They had, you know, glamorous nicknames, and there was a glamour to them. And, you know, again, you have these kids who are just getting sucked into that, and they think it's a glamorous world. And these guys are getting away with it because, you know, as we were saying during the break, if you're sitting in a nightclub and you're doing a line of coke, you know, you didn't have to go down some dirty alley to buy it off some, you know, dodgy character. It was, you know, probably couriered into the club and then, you know, distributed by, you know, a good, you know, somebody well-dressed and well-spoken. And there's a disconnect of, you know, between the people who are buying, Class A drugs, you know, and taking them in nightclubs, and the reality and the disgusting reality behind it, and the way that people, you know, particularly from deprived areas, are used and then tossed away, like refuse when they don't become more useful, or they're used as a disgusting pawn in this sort of feuds. And I think that, you know, people need to have a long, hard look at themselves over this, you know.
Just a text that have come in here. Will you ever wake up and smell the coffee? I live in Crumlin, and the only time you go to the guards is to renew your passport. A total disconnect between the people, the police and young people, says Noel.
I think that's a fair comment in terms of the psychology that exists there, and that has a breakdown of trust, and I think it's been rebuilt. We had the small area policing initiative in the inner city that was ongoing a couple of years ago that was working wonders, and then they cut resources to the police. We've had in the north inner city, for example, we had Fitzgibbon Street Garda Station, which is a very simple request for that to be reopened, and then we've seen the politicisation of Garda stations where Shane Ross was able to get Steppeside open. Now, in fairness to the people of Steppeside, I'm sure they need a police station, but not as much as was needed. treated in the inner city.
I think our text just makes that point too. This latest crime is abhorrent and the government treated like a game of whack-a-mole.
Can I speak to a political opportunity, I think, because I think all parties are moving towards a better space when it comes to drug policy. And I want to be as magnanimous as I possibly can in this regard, because there wasn't one objection from any political party to the drug injecting centre idea. Okay, all of us got on board with that. And every single political party in Leinster House is moving towards the idea of decriminalisation in various different in different forms. But I think we are all willing to think differently about drug policy and how drug policy is hurting the poor. If you go into the drug court, as I have done, or go into any court in the land, you'll see an awful lot of poor, sick people who are on the rough end of the criminal justice system. 70% of drug cases through our courts are for possession for personal use. A huge amount of people who are ending up in prison have addiction issues. And all those resources could be spent on tackling the guards that are making Drogheda, causing difficulties in Drogheda, or where I live, or where John lives, or where Gary lives. Now, I think we are mature enough now to have a mature discussion about drug policy, for not the word decriminalisation to mean that you have a liberal view on drug use, but that you are trying to stop the inequality which is resulting from our war on drugs, which, as your texter quite rightly said, is a lie. But there's nobody in the political system, in fairness, who is saying you're soft on drugs. I think all of us now have a capacity to make a change.
Do we, John?
I think we're moving in the right direction.
I broadly agree. I think people who are caught with small amounts of drugs for personal use, I think putting them in prison shouldn't be the first port of call. I think that's a health issue, and I think treatment should be certainly the first port of call. I also want to say, and I didn't get an opportunity, but we have a fairly robust legislation in terms of misuse of drugs and so forth. Equally, people who are caught with substantial amounts of drugs in this country, the legislation is quite specific, where the value is more than 13,000. There's mandatory sentencing of 10 years. And obviously, mitigating circumstances can be taken into account by the judge. For the year 2018, there was 140-odd people convicted of possession of drugs with a value of more than 13,000, and some of them hundreds of thousands. Only one person got the mandatory 10 plus years, and 99 or 100 got 5 years or less. So we need a consistency in what we're doing here. Yeah. And when we're talking about looking after people who are in possession of small amounts for personal use and putting them towards treatment rather than criminal justice system, we must also, the drug barons and the dealers of substantial amounts must also be dealt with, and the court system is failing them.
I think that kind of rhetoric is helpful in political terms, hearing that. Mandatory, put them away for 10 years.
It doesn't work.
But I'm wondering the politics of this, really. Like, the more complicated, and it is a very complicated story and a very complicated
issue. I do not buy that if the houses of the Oireachtas, if the members of the day and wanted to reflect the seriousness, where people who are being convicted of possession of drugs to supply and sell of hundreds of thousands of euro, that only one person in 2018 was convicted with that mandatory sentencing, and everybody else, I think at very, very least, there needs to be a review of sentencing policy, because society in general take it very, very seriously.
It's so very simplistic to say, I'm sorry, I don't mean that in an insulting way, but it's a very simplistic analogy that we've always had. I promise you, if we looked up every drug dealer tomorrow, we'd have a conveyor belt of young men coming through to take their place the next day. We're not going to be able to police our way out of this solution.
What we need to do is protect communities as well. And one of the problems in Drogheda, where some of these crimes have occurred, is that there's no CCTV, and that what they call the community CCTV in places like Moneymore isn't working, even though the lamp standards are there. The equipment is there, but houses can be petrol bombed because the data controller hasn't been agreed between the county council and the Garda.
Can I just ask our two journalists,
it's very important by protecting communities.
Will anybody be worried going to the door not having sorted this out, or with this blowing up? Is this something that people have, that we have any sense that people vote on and use their vote to try and drive policy in a direction?
Well, I mean, I think if you take sort of the sum of everything, you know, so it's actually about crime, it's about health, it's about, you know, it's about drugs, it's about the cocaine, you know, explosion all over, you know, what it's doing to young people. So if you take it as a whole, so it's not just, you can't, you know, Gary talks about, you know, areas of deprivation, and Aon does, and, you know, and then you talk about crime and Drogheda, and then you talk about the cocaine epidemic. It's all the one story. Mm. And, you know, it's
but is that the problem? It's too complicated to actually package it nicely and present it as look at what I've done for you. Look what I can do for you.
It should be more simple. I mean, it should be, you know, if the politicians care enough, they'll find a way to actually make this an issue. I mean,
I just want to ask you, because I'm just watching. I have to take another break. But Sheila, in smaller towns where I'm sure it is ravaging families and parents in particular must be so terrified that their kids are going to get sucked into this.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I know somebody, anecdotally I heard, who is moved to one of the towns locally and from Dublin, but she actually goes back to Dublin every weekend because the drug dealers come out to deal in her corner, you know. I mean, that's, like, there's a lot of that kind of, the but prevalence
will
of
it have
is,
a political, is there, a, will it have
no,
a
no, I think it ties in actually with what Lisa is saying, Lisa's dead right there, in that it ties in with the idea of the antisocial behaviour, you know, that it's all part of that whole big package of antisocial behaviour, say of feuding in particular areas in Longford and Westmeath, that can be an issue. And it all ties into that.
It's also about sporting facilities, community facilities that aren't in communities that should be.
I'm going to have to take another break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannon on RTE Radio 1.
And that is all we have time for. Just time for a couple of headlines from the Irish Examiner. That's leading with experts say that drugs industry exploits children. I think we'd pretty much gathered that over recent events. And the other political story on page one there, McDonald hit by fallout from Holohan slurs. And that's, of course, the podcast from that Sinn Féin councillor, which the Examiner is telling us is becoming a problem for Mary Lou McDonald. That's it. Tonight's programme was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by A.B. Philbin Bowman. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Pather Carney was on sound. I want to thank my panel for joining me this evening and hand over now to Colm Murray on Late Date.